forget frequently asked questions.
Common sense, common knowledge, or Google.
How about advice from a real genius? 95% of people in any profession are good enough to be qualified and licensed. 5%
go above and beyond.
They become very good at what they do, but only
0.1%.
are real geniuses. Richard Jacobs has made it his life's mission to find them for you. He hunts down and interviews geniuses in every field. Sleep science, cancer, stem cells, ketogenic diets, and more. Here come the geniuses. This is the Finding Genius Podcast
with Richard Jacobs.
Hello, this is Richard Jacobs with the Finding Genius Podcast, now part of the Finding Genius Foundation. So my guest today is Kyle Mitchell. He's a TEDx speaker. He's an author and founder of Social Anxiety, Kyle. We're going to talk about social anxiety in teens, which I have direct experience seeing many families with teens, including mine periodically. So I think this is going to be a very, very important topic, and it's I think it's much more pervasive than perhaps people could imagine. So welcome, Kyle.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Well, tell me a bit about your background and how you got to speak on this topic.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a little bit of a long story because it pretty much involves my whole life. But how I kind of got on to, you know, speaking about this is because I simply struggled with this mightily my whole life, especially in high school. And so once I, you know, got out of high school and started getting into college, I started, you know, working on myself and trying to find ways to get to a point in my life where social anxiety wasn't controlling everything that I did. Once I finally got to that point, I was like, you know, I want to be the person that I wish I had in high school. So that's what really got me started into going around speaking at middle and high schools across the country and just helping teen students out that are, you know, struggling with this. And kind of like you said in your introduction, it's much more prevalent than most people think, much more anxiety than you could probably ever imagine that's going on with the students today. So it's a good time for me to be doing this.
Sorry. What has been your interaction with, what gave you this perspective that there's so much anxiety, you know, working with teens, or, you know, what is it specifically?
I mean, to be honest, I didn't know there was so much until I actually got into, I knew there was some for sure, but I didn't know there was so much until I started getting into the schools and talking and working with the students, and it blew me away. I was like, oh, this is much higher than I even thought.
What are some, you know, maybe initial stories that, you know, like punched you in the face when you first started interacting with this, like that shocked you or made you think, oh man, I didn't realize this was like this?
Probably the biggest one, and I have several that are very similar to what I'm about to tell you, which is unfortunate, but probably the biggest one is students will message me and talk to me saying, hey, I'm struggling, I'm looking for help, but my parents are just completely dismissing what I'm saying. They're saying that I'm not really struggling with anxiety, it's all in my head, or I'm just making it up for attention and I don't know what to do. I think that's one of the biggest stories that kind of just smacks me in the face, because like it just hurt my heart here and that. It's like, oh, because I grew up privileged in the sense that my parents were not like that, and which was really, really crazy to think about, honestly, because mental health wasn't as prevalent as it is now, you know, wasn't as mainstream. Yet they were still very understanding of how I felt, even though they didn't really understand how I felt, but they knew, you know, that's how he's feeling, that's how he's feeling. So that was a huge blessing to have my parents on my side. Could they provide me a whole lot of resources and things to like specifically like help me out? No, not really. But just to have somebody on my side that, you know, was living with me, to be on my team and that I knew was there for me and I could go to them and just kind of unload what I was feeling was extremely helpful.
Yeah, no, that's excellent. Do you think that just parents aren't prepared for the level of anxiety out there? Or why do you think that there's such a disconnect between parents and teens?
I think a lot of it has to do with their experience in, you know, in school is much different than their kids' experience in school. So, you know, obviously the biggest thing that comes to mind and the difference is, you know, teens today are on, you know, all six social media platforms at the same time, constantly bombarded by information, all addicted to their cell phones. We kind of all are. But, you know, they're growing up with that. And when their brain's not fully developed and they're trying to manage that along with just kind of the normal stresses of, you know, high school life, of making friends, you know, dating, kind of that you know, the different cliques and those types of things in school. So they're dealing with that stuff along with, you know, everything online and just what I like to say, they're just overloaded with information. I mean, we all are overloaded with information with cell phones, but like I said, they're dealing with it. And at a time where they're growing up with it, and like I said, before their brains even fully developed, they're taking all this on.
So what is your role now? Are you trying to develop programs to help people deal with anxiety, or what, you know, how are you taking part in helping the situation?
Yeah, so I started just speaking to students, just doing kind of assemblies, but I just recently built and started a program called the Stand Project, which is a little bit more involved and not just me speaking, but I'm allowed to work kind of in person with the students doing some things that I talk about. One of the coolest things I think is kind of like the group social exposure. So I talk a lot about, you know, for social anxiety, doing some baby step uncomfortable challenges, but that's pretty daunting to take on, you know, to go outside your comfort zone, even if it isn't a small way to go out and do this on your own. So that's one of the things that I've implemented in the program, so we can kind of do it in a safe group setting. So there's not so much pressure. We're all kind of on the same page in this small group.
Also, what do you mean? Like, what kind of activities?
Yeah, so I haven't actually, like I said, it's brand new, so it's going to be starting in the upcoming school year, but some just kind of small activities. One, I kind of quote unquote stole from my speech class in college because I thought it was really cool and was really helpful to me. But I remember in that class, our professor always told us, he always had us get up in front of everybody and speak for 60 seconds. He would just give us a random topic and we wouldn't be able to prepare. We would just go up there and just do 60 seconds. And, you know, some people would just kind of get up there and talk for a little bit, kind of have some pauses. And that was fun. But it was all just like getting those reps in and just getting you used to like speaking up in front of, you know, a small group of people. So that's like one of the activities that we will do, is just kind of like small exposure in a social setting. I love that one, especially because, you know, in school, you have to do some public speaking in front of your classmates. And that's one of the one things that probably 95% of the students are just terrified of doing, not comfortable. So it's a really good way to show like you can do this. Yeah, it feels uncomfortable, but also listen to your body and look how you feel after doing it. Because even if you didn't go the exact way you wanted, it doesn't even matter. It's all just about taking the effort and going outside your comfort zone and doing the thing.
There's an organization called Toastmasters for people that want to learn how to speak. It's been around for decades. It's a small group and they have people, you know, learn public speaking, and they're very congratulatory and they have, you know, rules to encourage everyone. And, you know, you might want to look at that organization to give you ideas on how to make it more effective, like right out of the gate, and maybe attend a meeting or two, but it's supposed to be really excellent.
Yeah, I've heard of it before. I've never actually done it, but yeah, I'll definitely have to check that out a little bit more.
Well, what other programs are you contemplating for their students?
That's the main program that I'm working on right now. It also, you know, we do some kind of more intensive workshops that are a little bit more focused on, you know, one of the particular things that I'm talking about, whether it's we're talking about building self-love, self-confidence, you know, or just talking about strategies on, you know, what you should do when it comes to going outside your comfort zone. You know, what does that baby step uncomfortable challenge look like for you? I guess for me, it looks a lot different than what my challenges were, you know, 10 years ago. Because I mean, that's the beauty of it. Your comfort zone kind of grows. So you start to go a little bit further and a little bit further. And for me, that became addictive, because when I started to like feel that growth that I got from that and realize like, oh, I'm safe in this situation. Like anxiety doesn't need to come out for me anymore. So I can just go and I can raise my hand in class and I'm not feeling anxious about it anymore. And so I just continued doing on those type of challenges. And like I said, I started to get kind of addicted to it. And it's always scary at first, but it's always worth it every time.
Well, I haven't been in school in 25 years, and that was college. What is it like now in high schools and colleges? Like there's no one speak. Is it the teacher because they're too anxious, or, you know, how has it changed in your observation?
I'm not in school anymore either. It's been about 10 years or almost 10 years. But I mean, for me, like the biggest thing from like high school to college was when you got into college, they actually kind of graded you on, you know, participating in class, which was a big shift for me because I was like, I spent my entire life trying not to answer questions and now I have to in order to be able to, you know, get this 10% or 15% of my grade. And that was actually one of the first challenges I ever did was to just raise my hand one time in every class and just ask or answer a question. And so, yeah, I just started doing that. After doing that for a while, that's when I started to feel the results of it. And I just kept continuing on to do stuff like that.
Well, I remember in high school, my biology teacher had us pair up with another student and we had to teach one class on, you know, the brain or the leg or whatever it was. And I remember doing that with, you know, a friend of mine and looking out on the audience of kids and, you know, no one says a word and they're just kind of like looking at you with, you know, unhappy expressions. It's like very intimidating. But it taught me, oh, wow, the teacher, it's not easy to do that, you know? So that may be too confronting for people, but it's another exercise that we did.
Before we continue, I've been personally funding the Finding Genius podcast for 4.5 years now, which has led to 2,700 plus interviews of clinicians, researchers, scientists, CEOs, and other amazing people who are working to advance science and improve our lives and our world. Even though this podcast gets 100,000 plus downloads a month, we need your help to reach hundreds of thousands more worldwide. Please visit findinggeniuspodcast.com and click on Support Us. We have 3 levels of membership from $10 to $49 a month, including perks such as the ability to see ahead in our interview calendar and ask questions of upcoming guests, transcripts of podcasts you're interested in, the ability to request specific topics or guests, and more. Visit findinggeniuspodcast.com and click Support Us today. Now back to the show.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, getting over kind of the stairs. I can remember just feeling like the expectation that I was supposed to be great, and then I felt like I wouldn't meet that, so then I'd feel even worse about it. But yeah, that's exactly why I took the elective of speech class in college, because I knew I was terrible at it. I knew I needed to be better at it. So I was like, okay, I'm just going to force myself to go and do this. One of the things I found helpful for me is if I could get people to laugh in the beginning, even just a slight chuckle, it would make me feel much more comfortable and I could be able to speak the rest of the time, you know, just kind of freely and just being authentic Kyle and not feeling like a robot, like I have to, you know, get through these slides, and I could just kind of have fun with it.
What about your TEDx talks? Like, was that crazy stressful? And do you tell your students about what that experience was like and show them?
Yeah, that was definitely stressful. There's definitely a lot of expectation on myself to do great, to be perfect, at least in the beginning. You know, it's a TED talk that I wanted to be the best possible. And so I tell this story all the time. I remember I was waiting on the person in front of me to finish speaking, and I was just kind of standing side stage, just kind of watching them speak. And I could just like feel it in my chest of like, oh, I can't mess up. I gotta rock this thing. I gotta do really good. And then I kind of stopped for a second. And I was like, you know what? No, I'm not gonna try to be perfect. I'm just gonna go out there and I'm gonna have fun. Like, I don't care if I mess up or stumble over my words. Like, I just want to go out there and make sure that I have so much fun doing this. And that's the energy that I went in with. That having that mindset allowed me to really just be free about it, not have the pressure of, you know, messing up or forgetting something or saying the wrong thing. I was able to be a lot more free with myself and just talk. It didn't feel like TED talk, so to speak. It's just me just speaking my story and the things I talk about at school. So just felt a lot more natural. And like I said, all because I took that pressure off myself.
So what have you noticed with students, you know, when you first propose to them, or I guess you haven't yet, but you're about to? I don't know, have there been other proposals you've made to them where you could see like the anxiety level is so high that you have to baby step them on everything? Or like, what is your overall observation of teens that you've interacted with?
Yes, sometimes it's so high that, like I said before, it's hard to take that first step. So I always encourage them, start practicing learning how to love yourself. And, you know, that kind of term of like self-love, that kind of comes off as kind of a quote unquote foo-foo, if you will, for lack of a better term. But it has been such an impactful thing for me to just really learn to love Kyle, love me for who I am. And by doing that, it's allowed me to stop worrying about what others may or may not think about me. And the more I've been able to love myself, the more I've been able to worry and care less about what other people think. And when I'm in that kind of zone, I can go outside my comfort zone and, you know, do these little challenges. And it's still scary for sure. It's never just going to be easy, but it makes it to where I can go out and do that thing. So I always tell them that's the first step, is really start building that self-love for yourself, start practicing, learn how to love yourself, start talking in the mirror to yourself, using those self-affirmations, start getting those things cycling in your subconscious mind every day. Because we all have thoughts kind of cycling in our subconscious mind as we just kind of walk around. We may or may not notice that we even do it. And a lot of people have some negative things that are just kind of going on in the back burner of your mind. Just, you know, I'm not good enough. I'm not good at talking to people. I'll never be a good public speaker, you know, X, Y, Z. And that stuff just runs in your mind. And what self-affirmations helps people do and has helped me do is I start to program what I want to run in the back of my mind. So I'm speaking, you know, I am good enough. I am a good speaker. I am good at talking to people. I'm great at networking. And so now I got those thoughts that are running in the background of my brain. And so it's been able to help a lot for me to be able to build that self-love for myself and not have those constant, you know, cycling negative thoughts running in my mind.
Yeah, but instead of saying I'm a good speaker, why not say, you know, I practiced 10 hours a week for the past month. So I've spent 40 hours practicing, so I'm very prepared, and therefore I'm going to do a good job. Instead of just saying like I'm good at it, that kind of, I don't know, I would think a lot of people that are used to saying negative things to themselves, that wouldn't hold. They'll be like, no, I'm not. I'm just lying to myself. But maybe if it's the other way, it's things they actually did do. You know, how can you pass judgment on that? Or it's harder to, I mean, you know, if I have practiced for 40 hours, I could say, yeah, but I'm still not good enough. But at least I can't deny that I practiced for 40 hours and I've gotten at least somewhat better.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a good point, right? You can't go in the mirror and say, I'm going to be an NBA player next year. If, you know, if you're not even practicing, if you're not even playing basketball, yes, you do absolutely have to put in the work. And like you said, I can't just go up to the mirror and say, you know, I'm a good public speaker and just straight up lie to myself if I'm not actually putting in the work to it. And if you are putting in the work to become a better speaker, if we're staying on that example, it can still feel kind of daunting to yourself, even if you have put in, let's say, 10 hours every week. It's just like, I feel like I'm still not very good. It's like, okay, me, you know, I'm working to be a better speaker. I'm getting better every single day because I am practicing. You know, I am putting in the work to do it. I'm better than I was a month ago. So yeah, that is a very good point. Thank you.
Okay. Are you at the point where you've tried different things with the students and seen that some work better than the others? Or is it all this so new that you're not at that point yet?
I think it's more of presenting the ideas that clicks well for them. So that's kind of the stage I'm at, is how can I present this in the best way to where it clicks? And because I know it'll work if they can put it into practice, but how can I get it to click in their head and get them bought into the idea? I think that's the biggest challenge. And you got to think about how to speak differently to students. So like how you speak to middle school students is a little bit different than high school students. I get different reactions from middle school students on things than I do from high school students.
Like what differences have you seen and why?
Yeah. So one in particular is like, I'll talk about the self-affirmations and I talk about how you can use music in the background to really stir the emotion in as you're speaking these affirmations out. So you can say it as if you actually believe it. Because it's one thing to say, I'm amazing, but it's another thing to say it like you actually mean it, like, you know, like, I'm amazing. So I'll have music in the background. I'll show them the difference between the two of just me just saying it and then me kind of doing it on, you know, live on stage as if I'm just sitting or standing up in front of my bathroom mirror, speaking it with the music on and kind of, you know, getting hyped about it. High school students, they love it. That clicks with them. They cheer every time. Middle school students, kind of like we were talking about earlier, they kind of look at you with this weird stare when you do that. So it's just finding different ways for it to click with them and finding different examples for them, for it to make sense and for it to click. And that's one of the ones recently that I've kind of figured out, like, okay, high school students respond really good to every time with this, but I need to present it in a different way to the middle school students and find something that really clicks for them.
Well, what have you noticed about self-image and anxiety as kids, you know, go from middle school to high school?
I guess it's kind of different. I mean,
do you think it just linearly goes up? Or do you think even early on, you know, maybe 14, 15-year-olds are able to, you know, gain a measure of control or assertiveness where they don't keep getting more and more anxious? Like, where do you see this phenomenon peaks? Or it doesn't seem to be like that. It just some younger or more so, some older or more so. Is there any pattern?
I don't know how much of a pattern there is. I think I've never got to like see, you know, students go out from middle to high school, right? But I think as they become high school students, they start to develop that self-image a little bit more, sometimes in a really good way. And they start to feel more confident about themselves and feel a little bit better. And then sometimes it's not so much in that way. And it's kind of on the opposite end. And they kind of feel even more lost than they were when they were in middle school. So I wouldn't say there's like a super specific pattern that I've really noticed, but it's just a little bit of everything across the board.
Okay. Yeah, I was just wondering, again, if it just continues, but you haven't seen. What about in boys versus girls? Is there a big difference in different ethnicities, cultures? Like, what do you see as the difference amongst your students?
Yeah, there's definitely a big difference between the males and females, for sure. Females are a lot more receptive to the message, I guess you could say, and doing these things, just because females in general talk to each other more about their emotions, how they're feeling, while us males, and myself included, a lot of times is kind of bottle that stuff up. We don't necessarily share. I'm not speaking for all males, but a lot of males don't necessarily share with, you know, their friends how they're feeling, or if they're, you know, feeling sad that day, or, you know, feeling depressed, anxious, whatever it may be. Whereas I've noticed that the females definitely are a lot more comfortable doing that type of thing. So that's definitely been a big focus of mine, is to really find ways to get males more on board and really specifically just to be more open and talking with their friends. I think that's such a big help, instead of just trying to tackle it all by yourself. I'm not saying you should start like group therapy with your friends and everybody go around and, you know, share their most vulnerable moments, but man, just talking about the simplest of things, you know, my grandmother passed last week and I'm just feeling kind of sad about it, you know, and just being able to share little things about what's going on with you in your life, even if they can't provide you the answers, just being able to like share that with your friends is really helpful. So that's something that I've been thinking and focusing on a lot.
Is there a baseline level of anxiety that's different in boys versus girls, or are they anxious about different things?
It's hard to say, because I think just the girls are more open to admit it, right? The boys aren't as much so to, you know, admitting that, oh, I feel anxious, because it's kind of seen as like this weakness, or, you know, as they like to say, like, you're a beta male if you feel that type of way, that's a weakness. And so I think it's pretty similar. Girls might have slightly higher anxiety rates. I mean, I know they do if you look at like the studies and stuff like that, but like I said, I don't know how much I can really take all that stuff to heart, because I don't know if that study is being fully transparent on like the actual, you know, anxiety states of the boys, because I don't know how many actually admit that. I mean, it's one thing to say it, but it's another to like admit it to yourself. Even if you're just doing like an anonymous survey, it's like, how anxious do you feel? And it's like, oh, if I'm anxious, I'm that's a weakness. Like, oh, I don't feel anxious at all. Like, I have to believe that a lot of that goes around. So I feel like the anxiety levels of males are a lot higher than what they're seeing on these recent studies that we've seen on teen mental health.
Okay. So what do you think is needed to help, you know, large numbers of, you know, middle school and high school kids? Is there a formal program that you're putting together that you're going to syndicate to different schools, or what do you think is needed?
I think, yeah, the program that I am doing and working, and just kind of just, I think there's a lot of power. It's hard for me to even talk like about this, because it feels like I'm boasting and talking like I'm the thing, but I think there's a lot of power in just me coming in and sharing and being vulnerable with the students about my most, you know, difficult times in my life in high school, and just sharing that and showing that as, I'm not ashamed of that. I find that as a strength that I can do that. I say it all the time. Vulnerability is a superpower, because if you can be vulnerable and you can open up about your past struggles, I've owned that stuff. I've owned it. So it's like, it can't hurt me anymore. And so I've been able to own it. I'm trying to share with the students, especially the male students, that even if you are going through a hard time, even if you are feeling anxious or sad or whatever it may be, you can work through that stuff. You can own it and move forward and not be like, oh, I'm kind of ashamed that I ever felt like that. But it's, for me, it's like, oh, I am like so proud of myself that I was able to go through that and then come on the other side and doing what I'm doing now, whether that's you like speaking to other students or just, you know, accomplishing whatever goals you're trying to go for in life. So I think that's a big thing of, and I'm not saying like not just me, but just anybody who can relate to the students and show that, you know, vulnerability is not a weakness. Feeling sad or anxious or whatever it may be is not a weakness, but you can overcome these things and that actually becomes your strength. I like to say all the time that, you know, going or high school was the worst time of my life, but also the best time, because it put me through so much struggle, but it made me the person I was. You need that struggle to be able to grow. And I think that was so helpful for me to be able to go through that struggle, because if I didn't ever go through that struggle, or if I just sat in it, just said, I can't do anything, I'm not going to take action, my life would be completely different. I mean, I'm married now and I have 3 kids, and that surely would have never happened had I never, you know, taken action and done something about it.
Yeah, no, that's excellent. Have you looked at stoicism as a way to help, you know, yourself and the kids you work with?
Yeah, I've looked a little bit into it. I've Tim Ferriss, I'm sure you've seen it if you know about stoicism, but Tim Ferriss has a really good TED Talk on stoicism.
Yeah, it just might be another tool that, you know, you can bring to bear to help the students and everything. So that's why I mentioned
absolutely.
It. Okay. Well, very good. What do you see as the future of your endeavors? Like, what do you hope to, or what do you intend to accomplish in the next, you know, couple of years here with your work? Where's it going?
Well, my goal is to help 1 million teens go from socially anxious to socially confident. I really just want to help students find that power while they're young and while they're still in school to feel good about themselves, feel confident. So you can start to get these skills and start putting them into practice early. It's going to be so much easier in life than trying to do that while you're, you know, past high school and you're in college or you're working full time now. It's hard. I want to say it's hard to find time, but it is a little bit more difficult to start to, you know, work on yourself, where if you can start this stuff early in life, it's so helpful, you know, as you're moving forward. And that's something that I try to teach my kids and instill in them, is to start really, you know, working on yourself and understanding why you feel how you feel, and, you know, developing different practices, you know, practicing meditation and gratitude and all that good stuff to really train your brain to prepare yourself for the rest of your life.
Okay, very good. Where can people find your TED Talk? You know, what can they put into YouTube? And then where can they track your progress and see what you're doing and get involved?
Yeah, you can find my TED Talk on YouTube. Just type in Social Anxiety Kyle Mitchell. It'll be one of the first ones. And then if you want to check on everything that I'm doing, I'm pretty much on all the social medias at Social Anxiety Kyle.
Okay, very good. Well, Kyle, thanks so much for coming on the podcast. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
If you like this podcast, please click the link in the description to subscribe and review us on iTunes.
You've been listening to the Finding Genius Podcast with Richard Jacobs. If you like what you hear, be sure to review and subscribe to the Finding Genius Podcast on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. And want to be smarter than everybody else? Become a premium member at FindingGeniusPodcast.com. This podcast is for information only. No advice of any kind is being given. Any action you take or don't take as a result of listening is your sole responsibility. Consult professionals when advice is needed.